Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. A pleasure to have you here, and we're continuing our extraordinary conversations with Dr. Michael Armour here on Close Up Radio. And on this episode, we're going to be focusing on building resilient self-worth as we close out our October series of episodes with Dr. Mike here on Close Up Radio. Fascinating conversation coming up in just a second. Don't move an inch. As I've mentioned before, Dr. Mike established his reputation in professional circles with a remarkable ability to equip leaders across a variety of industries and global locations. He's the author of the noteworthy bestseller, Leadership and the Power of Trust. And he also says being confident with a keen sense of self is an essential part of savvy leadership. He states that resilience is also integral. Resilience serves us both as a way to react to changes in the business landscape, but also to protect our self-worth. He further stresses that being a dynamic and confident leader is not the same as being cocky. We've talked about that as well in a previous episode. Check that out. All the episodes are archived for your listening pleasure. For decades, Dr. Mike has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. He's a multidimensional achiever, consistently putting him in demand as an executive coach, business advisor, and trainer focused on management, leadership, cultural transformation, and other aspects of enhancing performance at both individual and organizational levels. During the month of October, we've been focusing on confidence and self-worth, including all they mean on a personal and even more significantly, business leadership levels. Let's welcome Dr. Mike back to the show for this episode as we round out the October month of series, again with this topic for today's show, Building Resilient Self-Worth. Dr. Mike, welcome back to Close Up Radio. It is always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jim. Been looking forward to our conversation today.
I have as well, so much and such a great way to wrap up the full solid month on these topics. What would you say to someone whose upbringing has sort of left them with a crippled sense of self-worth?
It's really not an extreme to say that some people have a crippled sense of self-worth. I've dealt with a number of those people. We find very few of them in senior leadership positions, but if we deal with people very broadly at all within organizations, we're going to find some employees who really do not have the strength of self-worth that we would normally expect of someone seeking a career in our particular organization or industry. So I guess my remarks here are more related to how a manager might communicate with someone, either in their family or someone who reports to them in a managerial role, who seems to suffer from a really inadequate sense of self-worth. Having worked with a number of people like this in the years that I was in ministry and doing pastoral counseling, one of the things I learned was that we're not all coming into the world with an equal chance in this regard. Because let's go back to something we've talked about in all the episodes to this point. Those three questions, those three value questions around which we form our sense of self-worth. We hear in that term worth that we're talking about value. How do I value myself? Fundamentally, we assess that by answering three questions. Is there any value to who I am? Is there any value to what I do? And is there any value to who I may become? We come into the world physically vulnerable, but of course also psychologically vulnerable. And those three questions, because we are psychologically vulnerable, are heavily shaped by what we experience in the first few years of life. Some people have the good fortune of coming into families who give them constructive, encouraging, empowering answers to those three questions. And by the time the child is into elementary school, the child has a clear sense that there is value to who I am, to what I do, and what I may become. But that may not always be the case. And I've dealt with many people for whom it was far from the case. Therefore, what I would say to them is that it took years for your crippled self-worth to entrench itself, so expect it to take years to fully uproot it. One of the groups of people who I've worked with who suffered from self-worth, again going back to my years in pastoral counseling, were women with multiple personality disorder, most of it rooted in extreme abuse, largely sexual abuse, that they were subjected to very early in life. And typically, in reintegrating what we once called multiple personality disorder, now it's called dissociative identity disorder, is typically a 4 or 5 year project if you're working with a skilled therapist. Now that's an extreme, but I'm using an extreme to say that damage to our self-worth is not corrected in 2 or 3 counseling sessions. There are deeply entrenched ways of thinking about ourselves and feeling about ourselves that we have to work through in an environment of trust, working with someone with whom we are confident that we can be perfectly open and share our deepest fears and worst memories and know that they will be treated respectfully, they will be treated confidentially, and that we will be encouraged to work through those issues in that setting of trust and confidence. Now, during this uprooting process, we always need to be guided by the principle, what happened to you in the past is out of your control, but what you do with that past is fully in your control. Let those who perpetrated your self-image problems be responsible for the past. Don't take responsibility for that. You take responsibility for the future. And in making your choices for the future, go back to those experiences of the past only to answer this question. We've identified those three critical questions that we use to determine our self-worth. Which one of those questions, or maybe more than one, had it been answered differently, would have precluded the damage that you've experienced to yourself, to your self-worth? And once you've identified those questions, let's then see if we can identify exactly how our parents may have failed us in this regard, and reparent ourselves. That's what we have to do. We have to quit letting our parents be our parents, but become parents to ourselves. It's as though we were like a child who lost his or her parents early in life, and someone adopted that child and became the parent to them. Sometimes we have to adopt ourselves because we had the misfortune of having parents who failed us in critical ways, and now we have to become parents to ourselves. And we have to continually articulate in our self-talk the kinds of affirming messages that we wish we could have had from them. And when that's done, it's really helpful to be working in a relationship with a professional if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, in a relationship with someone who is a good listener and a compassionate friend who is willing to let you talk through things and work through a change in perspective in which you are continually affirming to yourself that you are a person who has value for who you are, value for what you do, and value for what you may become. That's an almost superficial answer to a very deep question, but we could go on for several programs just digging into the implications of what I've just said.
What are the challenges to self-worth then as we age, and how should we cope with those challenges?
I call them the major challenges, the two big L's, limitations yes. and loss. As we age, there are more and more things we are no longer capable of doing. And as we age, more of those people who were dear to us, were close to us, were important to us, pass on. And so we become more and more aware of the amount of loss that has gone on in our life. I'm headed to a class reunion this weekend, and there are fewer of us left alive than have passed on. In fact, one of my very closest friends, a fellow who played guard with me on the basketball team growing up, has passed away just this past week. And I'm sure that in our gathering, we'll be sharing a lot of memories of the times that we spent with him. So life throws loss at us just because as we age, more and more people who were part of our inner circle pass on. But we also find that our physical capabilities become more limited, our vision becomes more impaired, our mental acuity may become more limited. And there are many things that we could once do that we no longer can do. There were connections that we once thrived on that are no longer available to us. Well, that strikes at those three questions we've been talking about. Is there any value to what I do? When I sense that I'm less and less capable of doing what I once took pride in myself for being able to do well, that's going to tend to have an adverse effect on my sense of self-worth. If I no longer have the connections with people who made me feel important just through their friendship, so that their presence in my life communicated that there is genuine value to who I am. Or maybe they really believed in me and encouraged me, so I relied on them to affirm that there is value to who I may become. When those losses occur, it inevitably has an impact on our sense of self-worth. Now, that doesn't mean it has to cripple our self-worth. It simply means that we have to come to those points in life ready to grow stronger from these experiences, from these stresses, rather than letting them begin to cripple us. It's the human spirit is really an interesting aspect of nature. We have the option of becoming stronger on the inside at the same time that we are becoming weaker on the outside. The human spirit is the one thing which need not shrivel with age. Everything else in the material world wears down, wears out, wears away with the passage of time. The human spirit, by rising to the challenges and stress that life inevitably throws at us, and showing the resilience to press through those things, grows stronger. It's like steel that is being tempered. We come through it stronger after the adversity than when we entered the adversity. And so it's important, as these limitations and losses come away, to use them as an opportunity to strengthen that resilience within our human spirit so that we continue to thrive personally, even though we have suffered a great loss in the world around us.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes to even absorb it all, but being prepared and pivoting when you realize that is so important. And if there's a way to, like you say, protect the self-worth and not have the self-worth diminish as the losses are acknowledged is an important thing. I mean, tragedies in our own inner circle can have an adverse impact on our self-worth, right? What are some of those strategies that you suggest for helping us cope with that self-worth so it's not impaired or reduced or lowered or even eliminated?
It begins by, I think, learning from the resilience of others. One of the things I've learned about life is no matter how bad my situation is, no matter how bad the situation of others around me may be, usually with not all that much effort, I can find someone else who is even worse off and yet is dealing with their condition with a spirit of resilience that is inspiring. And so one of the things that I think we should be doing all the way through life is watching the resilience of those around us, seeing how they deal with adversity and saying, what can I learn from them through what I've seen them do? In one of our earlier episodes months ago, I talked about my experience debriefing POWs at the end of the Vietnam War. Seven men who came out of the Hanoi Hilton, that infamous prison in downtown Hanoi, six of them held for years and years in some of the worst conditions of imprisonment that one can imagine. And as I debriefed those men about their experience, I was amazed at the kind of strategies that they developed mentally, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, interpersonally, in order to keep their resilience high. And I would not be giving proper credit to them if I were not to say that my own resilience in adulthood is in many ways attributable to what I learned from hearing their stories and seeing their example. So first of all, both ahead of time, but especially in the sense of loss and grief, learn from the resilience of others. Second, don't confuse grief with poor self-worth. I have found that that's an easy thing to do. I am so sad. I feel so bad. I begin to think that I must be a person who I may begin to evidence lack of self-worth in the way that I think of myself. Both poor self-worth and grief will make us feel sad, will make us feel bad, but they are not the same thing. Self-worth is separate and apart from the grief I've experienced over the loss of someone. So identify the precise loss you've experienced and then grieve it. The major way that we overcome a sense of loss is to face it, to articulate it, and to grieve it. I'll give you an example of this in my own life. In 2002, with very little warning, I suddenly decided to run for Congress. And this was the result of a long-serving congressman in our district who would have had a cakewalk if he wanted to be reelected, decided not to run, but he didn't make the decision until after the Thanksgiving holidays, and the filing deadline was the 2nd of January. And so a number of friends came to me and encouraged me to run. I finally decided to do so almost at the last minute. But one of the reasons that it took me so long to make the decision was that I quickly became aware of all the things I would have to give up if I were to spend the next phase of my life in Congress. I'm a consummate reader. I read widely. I always have. I have a PhD in intellectual and cultural history. So that tells you that I've got a bias toward learning and being in learning environments. There was going to be precious little time for that kind of reading. It was going to be a job in which just reading to stay abreast of what I had to do in terms of legislation and issues before us was going to consume my time. And there was a whole litany of things, a long list on a piece of paper of things that I had to give up if I were going to run, if I were to win especially. And so I then let myself grieve the loss of each of those and to accept the trade-off and come to be at peace with the trade-off. And only then did I put my hat in the ring. So that's what I mean about identifying the precise loss you've experienced and then grieve it. And if you're blaming yourself for this loss of someone in your inner circle or the damage that has come to them, the hurt that has come to them, quit blaming yourself. Be there in the present, accepting that you were part of a tragic experience, but quit blaming yourself, because self-blame is a sure path to damaged self-worth. And then most of all, particularly if you've lost someone in this, a loved one, a dear friend, a close colleague, identify the things that you treasured the most in the one you've lost, and then commit yourself to imitating that quality in your life. Do something constructive with the loved one's memory. And if we can approach the tragedies in our inner circle with these kinds of attitudes, it will help us move through that adversity that comes with, or that self-worth blow that comes in the wake of adversity, much more quickly and much more effectively. Excuse me.
That's so important for people to realize that there is opportunity to prepare yourself and to have opportunities to cope so the self-worth is not impacted. Resilience also is a vital resource for protecting our self-worth. Would you say, Dr. Mike, resilience, is that an inborn trait? Are some people born with more resilience than others?
That's an interesting question, because we have a hard time evaluating that in infants. Now, we do know that some are born with more physical resilience than others. A child born with a lot of allergies or other defects that limit their ability to cope with what they must contend with in life, obviously, they are not as resilient as their peers from birth. But psychologically and emotionally, that's a little bit different beast. There, our resilience is learned as much as anything. If we are reared in a home where people tend to panic and get upset if the least little thing goes wrong, we tend to follow suit. We tend to be children and then adolescents and finally adults who panic and get upset if things go wrong. If we're born into a family where people roll with the punches, they land on their feet, they say, okay, what did we learn from that that will make us more competent, more capable, give us more options tomorrow? Then they learn that approach to life, and so they learn to be more resilient.
You know, that's really important. Resilience is something that we all need to rely on and stress. But if we need more resilience, how do we go about building it? And as leaders, how do we build resilience in those organizations that we lead?
Well, if we look at resilience not as something that is inborn, but a capability that we develop, a potential that we flesh out, like any other capability, it's developed through practice. The overall strategy in this practice, if I can call it that. The overall strategy is to maximize our options for the future. When we get into a very difficult situation, we don't have very much opportunity to generate options, especially options emotionally or psychologically. We fundamentally develop exercise options at that point in those realms based on the preparation we've made for that moment. And so one of the things that we want to do is to have an overall strategy that through life, I'm going to be looking for ways to maximize my emotional and psychological and cognitive options so that when the crunch time hits, I've got more choices that I can make, and therefore I can be more resilient. That means practicing opportunities to be flexible. In my youth, before the Alcan Highway had been paved, there was a sign just as you entered it that said, choose your rut carefully. You'll be in it for the next 1,000 miles. Unfortunately, there are people who sort of live their life that way. They chose a rut early on, and they have been in it ever since.
Let's not be rut people.
Let's be people who are constantly looking for opportunities to develop more personal flexibility. And that means that we periodically take forays outside of our comfort zone. We try things new that stretch us a little bit, that force us to deal with circumstances or situations or people, challenges that we've never really confronted before, but we're going to learn how to be better at dealing with those because of these forays we make outside of our comfort zone. The one person I've come across who really carried this to what would seem like an extreme, but it worked for her, is that in her 20s, she began a practice on New Year's Eve of sitting down and listing all the things she was afraid of. And she would take the one other than death that was highest on her list, and she would develop a plan for the next 12 months to conquer that fear. And once she had that fear behind her, the next New Year's Eve, she broke out her list again and she took the next most fearsome thing. And by the time I met her in her early 60s, this woman genuinely was fearless because one by one, she took on the fears that forced her out of her comfort zone and got them behind her so that she was unintimidatable as she grew older. And finally, associate with people who are a bit adventuresome. Imbibe their joy in experiencing something new. And as leaders, we do the same thing with those that we lead. Our organizations can become rigid. They can become afraid of trying things new. An organization can develop its own weak self-worth. And building resilience into an organization is fundamentally the same thing that is behind building resilience into our personal lives. And that is we have to purposefully create experiences within the organization that help people become more flexible, force them, nudge them into their outside of their comfort zone and let them learn. And then we nudge them a bit more and nudge them a bit more until they are finally able to do things that once they thought unimaginable. And we surround them with leaders who are
exactly.
People who are upbeat, always find joy in experiencing something new so that leader's enthusiasm and excitement begins to bleed through to the people who follow them.
In your book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, you portray resilience using the analogy of a toy that was immensely popular with small children 40 years ago. Maybe in the remaining seconds we have, you can sort of close that out by recounting that, and then let us know how people can make contact with you, Doc.
Every time that we talk about subjects like those we've discussed today, I think about our children when they were very small, and I mean the toddler age. One of the most popular toys at that time was a toy called a Weeble. And there were Weeble people. And Weebles were little egg-shaped creatures with a head and a body painted on them. But they were shaped like an egg and weighted in such a way that the larger portion of that egg would always weight and align the Weeble so that it was standing up. But because the bottom of the egg was round, you could knock the little creatures around, and they would wiggle back and forth. They would wobble back and forth. And so the marketing phrase for Weebles was, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. And one of my fondest memories of the early childhood of our son and youngest daughter is them playing in the den, knocking those little characters around, and singing the song, Weebles wobble, but they won't fall down. And I remember sitting there thinking, I hope they learned that about life, because the important thing is not that we never wobble, but when we wobble, we don't fall down.
If folks want to make contact with you, best way do they do that so they don't fall down is which way?
My website is leaderperfect.com, an introduction to me, my work, and the various services we offer. I also have a podcast site called upsizeyourleadership.com that focuses narrowly on leadership themes. And for those who might want to use me for a speaking role in some event that they've got planned, check out keynotesandmore.com, keynotesandmore.com.
Dr. Mike, thank you very much for sharing all of this with our audience. I want to let everybody know that the entire episode is recorded in full. We have a lot of folks who listen in the archives, sort of on demand at their own time. So hopefully they're enjoying the series of episodes. And we'll kick off the month of November with a brand new exciting theme, so I encourage folks to tune in next week for that as well. Dr. Mike, thanks again for your wit and wisdom and joining us on the show today. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to kicking off the month of November as we get close to the holiday season together next week.
I will look forward to it. Thank you, Jim.
You be well. You take care. A very special guest, Dr. Michael Armour. We appreciate him being here. He is the author of the bestseller, Leadership and the Power of Trust. This is Jim Masters thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay right there. I'll be back in just a minute with another great guest coming up in just a minute here on Close Up Radio. For all of us, take care. Have a great day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.